Hello, Squawker Talker listeners, and welcome to the Squawker Talker Transfer Special, brought to you by William Hill, Squawker's official partners for the January transfer window. As you will have already seen, we'll be bringing you stats, analysis, kit swaps, and everything else you could possibly want during the transfer window alongside William Hill. And if you do fancy taking a punt on any of the rumours discussed, first of all, please make sure you're 18 plus and doing so responsibly. But you can visit William Hill's Transfer Specials page, which we'll be providing a link for in the podcast description. For more information about responsible gambling as well, please visit begambleaware.co.uk. At the midway-ish point of the transfer window, though, we wanted to take stock of the deals that have been done and pick out some key moves that you should probably be looking out for. Joining me to do just that on the Squawker Talker Transfer Special, a Friday release, never been seen before, or I can't remember being done before, is Oliver Young-Miles.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Are you excited about the transfer window so far?
Very much so.
Mohamed Butt is also joining us. Welcome.
Hi. Still buzzing. Very happy.
Still, yeah. Well, that will last a while, won't it, I think?
I mean, you know.
And we've even got a section for you to sink your teeth into.
I know, it's great. And you know what I realised? Barcelona's first away game after Valeriera is going to Ibiza for a large one.
The Lineker Derby.
They'll be celebrating as well.
Oh, yeah.
Playing the football they want, but not winning La Liga, perhaps. Barcelona to come on the Squawker Talker Transfer Special. And the final, but not least, guess. That's not how you say the saying usually, but Sam Long, welcome.
How's it going?
Good. It's going very well. As I mentioned, this is a sort of it's a mid-window podcast, of course, so there's still plenty to happen. We'll be doing another special at the end of it all to see where everyone stands. But we're going to talk about some deals that have been done first, specifically two clubs. And the first of which is going to be, of course, the would-be Invincibles, Liverpool, usually taking top spot on most things at the moment, including our podcast agenda. And they've, of course, made their signing even before January began. Takumi Minamino was the first signing, a measly 8.75 million, I think. It was definitely under 10 million. So what we wanted to talk about is how big of an impact will Minamino actually have at Liverpool, a man that is looking to win his seventh consecutive league title. Sixth consecutive league title.
I mean, you know, when they signed him, we all thought, oh, very clever, there's one for next season, they can spend 6 months building him. Because, of course, Klopp, you know, when he signed Fabinho, he bled him in very, very slowly, took about 6 months to really get in there, maybe a bit more. Keita only recently has really become like, you'd think, okay, established first team 11, big games, Keita's in the midfield. So Klopp takes his time bedding players in. And so you could argue, okay, Minamino's really been signed for 2020, 2021. But I think he can actually play a bit more now. Right, because I mean, first of all, Klopp played him in his first game as a striker, right, against Everton in the cup, right, and everyone was like, oh, he's just playing him just to play him there. But he said, and Will Hall's not here, so I've got some quotes because you know Will Hall keep his
some
spirit
actual
alive.
Factual knowledge,
yes, rather than just
rather than spouting stuff, yeah.
Well, you know, we've got to make up for Will's absence. So Klopp said, playing striker is the most natural position for him that he knows because I didn't want to give him a kind of a playbook. Right, so he didn't want to bombard him with stats. So when you think about it, it makes sense because when you're playing as a striker, you can basically press. You know, you have to know when to press, but you don't have to be aware of, for example, your opponent's triggering things. So when he goes there, where do I have to stand? Or when they're in defensive phase, where do I have to stand? If you're a striker, pretty much you press the people in front of you, centre backs, and then Rick runs in behind or drop deep to get the ball and get involved in play. There's nothing too complicated. That's why a lot of strikers aren't always necessarily great defenders, or if they are great defenders, it's mostly just pressing the two guys in front of them. So, and Liverpool don't really have a backup striker. I know they have Origi, but they play Origi from the left. He plays better from there. He can't really play up front very well, not with the way Liverpool play. And you look at what Minamino can bring, and I think genuinely he could be a Roberto Firmino backup. And again, that sounds like, okay, so
he's got half the name.
Yeah, well. Just got that. I was like, wait, what? Yeah, oh yeah,
I'll start with first name then. I didn't know where.
Yeah, that was very well done. But seriously, you think about it, that Liverpool have no one like Firmino. When he doesn't play, they have to change the way they play and the whole system and everything. And okay, you're thinking backup, that still means next season. But Liverpool are, how far are they now? Like 10, 20 points, 30 points, 50 points ahead of everyone else in the Premier League? They're going to win the thing by March. That's a lot of football left when you've got like Champions League to chase, probably, presumably. You know, I think Minamino will play a lot. I think he'll play quite a surprisingly large amount in the back half of the season, because I think Liverpool, first of all, you want to give him games to bed him in. Secondly, Liverpool will want to rest Firmino for the big crunch Champions League knockout rounds. And, you know, and they won't have to play, they're not having a 97-98 point showdown with Man City. They've got space, lots of breathing room to rest Minamino. But it's also not, and you know, you can say sometimes, okay, these games will be meaningless though, because they're dead rubbers, right? But Liverpool, they're not dead rubbers, because Liverpool are chasing
They're chasing the main one.
Yeah,
is obviously they get most points, but yeah. it's becoming the Invincibles 2.0, which with William Hill at the moment, you can get 7-2 to remain unbeaten for the entire season, and 4-1 to win the Champions League. So they could do. I think it was Duncan Alexander that did the. Sort of put the tweet in everyone's minds that they could do the treble, they could be Invincibles, and they could be Centurions. Yeah. And they're planning to do all that. And as you've said, they'll need a full-on... They can't rely on one striker to complete all of those feats. So Minamino, the latest sort of from that Red Bull vending machine that Klopp seems to enjoy going to in the transfer windows.
Yeah, another quote. Respect for Will. Well, they interviewed Minamino before when he signed. Like, what did Klopp say to you before you played? And he said that Klopp told him to play the same way you did at Salzburg, play the Minamino way. So Klopp loves Red Bull Salzburg. He loves that project. Frankly, who doesn't? But you can see why.
I think a lot of people don't like it.
Really? Oh, well, yeah. Fine, actually, I guess some Pauli fans and everything. But, you know, you look at the way Salzburg play and the way that Ralf Rangnick has put those two teams together, and it fits a lot with a lot of Liverpool players. I mean, there's a reason why they had like three or four ex-Salzburg players in the lineup.
Keita, Mane.
Yeah, when they beat them. So, you know, you can see that the links there and why it makes a lot of sense. So I think, yeah, Minamino, I think could be, you know, we're all like, oh, he'll be a backup for a number winger, he'll be a number 10. I think we'll see him a lot as a false nine for the rest of the season. I think genuinely he'll play a bunch, maybe even score a few goals.
He'll be a mini Mino. There's another way to use it.
You're on fire today, mate. Well done.
I don't think it is on fire. Because
Friday fire.
Given the reactions
to it. The first one was all right.
Friday fire from Jake.
That one less so.
Sam, you've something to add there.
Yeah, I was going to say I was surprised to see him play central. Obviously, when we was at Anfield at the game.
We got to see it firsthand.
Yeah, and he looked very, very good. And you mentioned about him having the responsibility of pressing from a central area. That is a big statement to give to a new signing, because you are leading the whole press, you're leading the whole team. But Minamino seems to have just come in, he seems so unassuming, like he's just going to do his job, not sort of ruffle any feathers. And it's a perfect signing for Liverpool.
I was going to say, that's the exact signing Liverpool need, isn't it?
Yeah.
An actual bit of talent, but not anyone that thinks they're more talented than the squad that
exactly,
we've got.
Exactly, to slot in.
A team that for the first time ever have won 60 points after 21 games, 61 points after 21 games. Mm. There's almost no one can come in and think, I'm better than this squad. So you need those players that are going to just accentuate everyone else's strengths, whilst also, as Mo said, covering when you perhaps need to rest Firmino. And as well, Firmino, someone that is coming up clutch in all the away games. Maybe you start playing Minamino as the Anfield forward, and still Klopp mentioned in those quotes that you brought up, saying that it was difficult for Minamino in that first game because he didn't have Salah and Mane beside him, who you can just give it to and they make things happen. So maybe to embed him further in, you start playing him in the Anfield games when maybe the league's wrapped up and he's playing with the players that he will play with next season if he were to play, and that will make him look even better. One of those associative players that looks better with the better players you play alongside. So as I mentioned, 7-2 to go unbeaten. I think we discussed that on previous podcasts. Maybe Minamino's impact won't define whether they go unbeaten or not. But as I said, he's chasing a sixth consecutive league title himself. So definitely wants to play a role in securing the first Premier League title for Liverpool. And even in the Champions League, do we feel like he'll then become the Premier League player then rather than the Champions League striker? And that'll be purely reserved for Firmino.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're so far ahead in the league that they can effectively just rest. I mean, they could rest their entire team, I would argue. Maybe not Van Dijk, but literally apart from him, you could rest maybe everyone and rotate everyone As long as you've got, they've got the squad numbers in terms of fitness. Although, frankly, their youngsters have shown themselves to be quite capable as well.
So Everton could
rest everybody before and after Champions League games. And that's kind of terrifying. I mean, if you think back to, I mean, God, it's a long time ago now, but Milan won the Champions League in 2006-07, and they did that by literally the second half of the season when it was a Champions League game. Kaká didn't play at the weekend. Seedorf, Pirlo, none of them played. And then they came into Champions League and they were fresh and they were brilliant and they won the Champions League.
Got revenge against Liverpool as well.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, that should worry every team in the Champions League that Liverpool are so far in the Premier League. Because, look, there's weaknesses, that blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they've shown weaknesses and, yeah, better teams maybe could hurt them. But also, they're now going to have to focus so much more of their attentions on Champions League games in terms of physical preparation, especially, and technical. Yeah, then it's going to take something to stop them.
I hope they don't, though, because if Liverpool are going for all these records, then I want to see them go close to it. I don't want, at the end of the season, to look back and they miss the Centurion or something like that for the sake of resting players.
I don't know how many of their key big hitters will want to miss out either. Like Salah's going for a third consecutive Golden Boot. Mane got the Golden Boot as well last season, shared it with him. These guys are going to want to play. And
it might be their last chance to get a Golden Boot with AFCON being moved back to January, February. Mm. Liverpool will have to repeat this next season, get 60 points in the bank so that you then can't do it.
I mean, Firmino's obviously hugely important, but he's only got 7 league goals. I'm sure he'll want to build on that as well. So they've got a lot of players that will want to end the season strongly, I think. But obviously it's great for Klopp that he's got the squad that he can chop and change now.
We are moving from the top of the Premier League table to not the bottom just yet. Norwich occupy that space, but 18th placed Aston Villa are the next team focus for our transfer special, mainly because due to a collection of injuries, the intrigue that was put upon Aston Villa because of the spending in the summer, and where they find themselves in the table. Danny Drinkwater, who has played 59 minutes in the last season and a half before he made his debut in a 6-1 defeat to Man City.
Where he got 3 assists for the first 3 goals.
For Man City. And a 37-year-old, Pepe Reina, who despite having the best clean sheet ratio of any goalkeeper in the Premier League that has kept 100 clean sheets, is 37 now. And he's replacing Tom Heaton, who was performing admirably. But Tom Heaton out for the season. Wesley, the striker, who they haven't yet replaced, unless Danny Drinkwater is going to occupy a false 9 role that we don't know about, has not been replaced. So how do Aston Villa, after spending all that money in the summer, being where they are now, still seem to be scrambling for signings rather than a project?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's not necessarily a good look for Villa that they seem to just be scouring the bargain basement looking for players at this month when they're in trouble and fighting for their lives at the bottom. But I think with them, it's important to sort of look at it as a timeline from 2018 when they lost the playoff final to Fulham. Is basically where this all started. So generally speaking, when Championship clubs get promoted, it's usually been the result of a 2-3-4 year plan, whereas Villa have kind of lurched from one thing to the other and eventually got promoted through having players like Jack Grealish who sort of dragged them up to the top flight. But yeah, 2018 they lost the playoff final to Fulham. Tom Kearney scored the winner, and after that game it came to light that Villa were in huge financial difficulties. Dr. Tony Gia, if we all remember him, that he loved Twitter. He was basically not in a good way financially. I think Villa were hemorrhaging about £5 million a month under his ownership. And they looked in dire straits, really. But luckily for them, they managed to find a new buyer very quickly. But that came towards the end of July 2018, leaving them with 2 or 3 weeks to get players in, basically forcing them into the loan market. 2018-19 season, 8 of 11's Villa signings were loans, including people like El Ghazi, Mings, Courtney Hawes, and of course Tammy Abraham, who was brilliant for them, top scored for them. And John McGinn, Orjan Nieland, and Lovre Kalinic. So 2 goalkeepers there were the only 3 actual signings that they made. So it was a squad very much built around a nucleus of loan players, with the likes of Grealish and McGinn sort of sprinkled in. And they managed to go up. Dean Smith obviously came in sort of November, December time, sorted out a squad that was meandering really under Steve Bruce, got them promoted. But after that was secured, 10 players were released or retired, including people like Alan Hutton, Birkir Bjarnason, the ASOS model slash Iceland international, Glenn Whelan and Albert Adoma, who were all sort of quite important first team players. And then the likes of Abraham went back to Chelsea. Tyrone Mings initially went back to Bournemouth. Mm. So suddenly they had a squad of about 8-9 players. And they were like, okay, well, we're going to have to buy some players now. So they obviously managed to get some of their loan players back. Mings came in, Courtney Hawes came in, Anwar El Ghazi came in. And they signed replacements for the players that had left. So Wesley is the obvious one for Tammy Abraham. Mm. And neither Nyland or Kalinic really made an impression. So Heaton was signed as well. But despite that summer splurge, Villa's squad is still short, as we've seen, and they're still very reliant on certain players. So the obvious one being Jack Grealish, who is head and shoulders the best player in that squad. But people like Mings as well, when he was missing recently, I think culminated in their poor run of form. His leadership at the back is crucial for them. And also Wesley, even though he perhaps didn't set the world alight, just as a focal point and a target man for that side is so important. And if you look at the backups for him, Jonathan Codger, arguably not good enough for the Prem and also has been injured. And Keenan Davis is another one, a young kid, pretty untested, who's also had injury problems as well. So recently they've sort of been experimenting with El Ghazi up front and Grealish up front, and it's not really worked. So basically their squad is only ever one or two injuries away from disaster, which is what we've seen in the last few weeks. They were very unfortunate in that after a couple of bad results over Christmas, they finally turned it around against Burnley on New Year's Day by winning, but in the process lost both Heaton and Wesley to season-ending injuries, which has caused them a bit of an issue.
Bit of a spheric victory then, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I knew that was coming.
Exactly. So yeah, they've basically resorted to quick fix loans to get the numbers up. And to me, this smacks very much of, you know, when you're playing Football Manager and you go on the transfer list and it's basically just people that other clubs don't want, big clubs don't really need them anymore. And you're just like, oh, okay, I need to get a few players in, get him on loan, sign him for 2 million or whatever. That's basically what they're doing with the Drinkwater and Reina signings. I think it's basically just to get bodies in because they're so short in those areas that it needs to be done. The problem is with those signings is they don't really, although they're replacing players that are injured, they're not natural replacements, I'd say, for either of the players that they're coming in for. Pepe Reina for Tom Heaton is a strange one. I think Reina is renowned for his long-range distribution and as a sort of ball-playing goalkeeper, whereas Heaton is basically just a shot stopper. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very good shot stopper who's limited with the ball at his feet. So it's a bit of a strange one in that sense. And then Drinkwater, I think, is even more bizarre in that he played as a left-sided centre mid against City, which is where John McGinn has been playing, but he lacks the dynamism of John McGinn. He doesn't score goals like John McGinn chips in now and again with goals. And he also doesn't provide the balance that McGinn does with his left foot. So it's a bit of a strange one that he's come in.
And his loan at Burnley
was a disaster.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, his last, he literally did not play in the Premier League under Maurizio Sarri at Chelsea.
No.
Played 500 minutes for Conte before that. So not only are you signing a player that is, as you said, maybe not fit for purpose tactically and in terms of his profile, even if he were, his match fitness must be complete rock bottom. And I feel sorry for him a bit because I know there were some off-the-pitch incidents during that time, during his loan spell, and I think it's difficult for a footballer not to play because that's what all they know how to do. So on a personal level, I feel sorry for him there. But in terms of Aston Villa signing him and expecting him to... That is a baptism of fire as well. Man City.
And there's that weird quirk as well that his last three Premier League games could come against Man City for three different clubs, isn't there? So, he's been thrown into the fire.
Yeah, he's not playing much after that. Situations. So maybe just not... People are using Man City as the test for Drinkwater. Yeah. And not many people pass that test. No. So maybe unfairly
There's been some debate as well after that City game that Drinkwater shouldn't have been involved because of the lack of match fitness that he's had. Which is obviously easy to say after a 6-1 defeat where he clearly looked off the pace, especially the second goal, I think it was, when he got caught inside his own area by City's press and then Mahrez smashed it in on the volley. But on the flip side, I guess Dean Smith has to get him up to speed quickly. So
I mean, it can't get worse than that, right? Like, the only way from there is up, surely.
He was literally up against Kevin De Bruyne.
I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, you can't really expect him to do too much. But, yeah, as you were saying, he's not match fit. And neither is Pepe Reina, really. Since the start of 2018-19, he's played 6 games in Serie A, that is, for Milan. He's obviously been Donnarumma's backup / mentor on the training ground, I guess. But he's not really played. So
and
he's
also
two
hide
players.
Man on the bench.
Yeah, yeah. Slash. He got sent off against Torino when he was a substitute and didn't come on.
So
Reina is ultimate hype man. I mean, that's literally why they had him as Spain's backup for all those years in a dominant period, because he was the ultimate hype man.
Putting Barcelona shirts on.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. That he would be basically MC'd their World Cup celebration. But I mean, he's pure hype. So I think. On that level, I can see why you'd sign him, and that he's going to bring a lot of confidence, a lot of experience in that to the squad. But you're almost asking him to go back literally a decade to when he was at Liverpool and play like that. Because like you're saying now since he left Liverpool, he's been like passed out the back, ball playing, risk taking. You know, he was at Bayern Munich under Pep.
Oh, I completely
Napoli.
Forgot about that. Cool.
Yeah, he went to Bayern, and he was Ancelotti with Napoli and Sarri at Napoli. So, you know, he's completely and utterly gone away from what he was. And they're basically, look, could you remember 10 years ago? Could you just be that guy again and just be really solid for
it? Even then, at the end of his Liverpool spell, it kind of turned a little bit the other way. He was great at Liverpool for the first 7-8 years, and then he kind of lost his way a little bit towards the end.
People just fell in love with that sidewinder kick that he sort of
side volley.
Yeah, he didn't bring it to the Premier League, but I remember really relating that type of kick
trademark
with his distribution with Pepe Reina. But as you said, when he started at Liverpool, 20 clean sheets, Alisson, Petr Cech and Pepe Reina, the only goalkeepers to keep 20 clean sheets in their first Premier League season. Yeah. So this is, more than 10 years ago. So not expecting him to just come in and keep clean sheets for Aston Villa.
Mm. I mean, the issue is combined, those players have had seven league games in the last year and a half. So it's expecting a lot to get them up to speed quickly, which is what Villa need.
So this is the thing, is they've almost repeated that. They're stuck in that. When you get sucked into the loan cycle, you then can't get out. Because as I said, they spent loads of money in the summer. Oh, they're the next Fulham. But all that was tying up the assets that they'd loaned, essentially. Now, a couple of injuries. Again, that's so unfortunate to happen. But because it's January window, you can't really usually get the players that you want. Mm. They're going to loan these two players. Even if Drinkwater and Pepe Reina turn out to be brilliant, they're not going to be there next season. And Aston Villa might be finding themselves in the same space, especially if they go down, then the financial implications come up. Yeah. So
that's what I was going to say about Wesley, because they spent sort of upwards of 20 million on him. And if they go down, I mean, obviously, if you put a big proportion of your budget into a striker and it doesn't come off, you're going to be left short. But Villa have been there before with Rudy Gested.
Mm.
I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
When they went down, they couldn't get rid of him. And now I think he's at Borough now.
It's going 2 years the other day.
It's a tough cycle once you're down and you've sort of made that signing to gamble to stay up, then you're immediately struggling to sell those players, because who's going to sign Wesley for upwards of 20 million?
Maybe because he's young enough that someone might again take a punt.
Or of course he could decide that he wants to stay and try and hack it in the Championship.
So at the moment, 14th is Brighton, 24 points. 15th, Burnley, 24 points. West Ham, 22. Watford, 22. Aston Villa, 21. Bournemouth, 20. And Norwich. Norwich look like they're down.
Bournemouth look like they're down as well.
Yeah, based on form-wise. Aston Villa, again, with William Hill. Not just transfer odds you can get on there, obviously. 8-13 to be relegated. I think we agree they haven't done enough at the moment to sort of say, no, they'll be fine. We mentioned that Jack Grealish, the further he gets up the pitch, the less of his strengths you actually see in terms of winning them fouls and carrying them up the pitch. So is it going to hinge on a striker? And is there anyone that you've seen maybe that would be the answer to the Wesley replacement? I know Olivier Giroud was the first link. Yeah. Which again may have been really tenuous, but it was based on the fact that he's a target man, not playing at all at Chelsea, same as Drinkwater. But their Drinkwater signing has now made that redundant, unless they buy Olivier Giroud. But he looks like he's going to Inter Milan, sort of done and dusted now. So Olivier Giroud off the table. Is there anyone that you've seen linked, or anyone that you've come across that you think may be the answer?
There's been hundreds of strikers linked the last few days, but again, a lot of them are from the Football Manager transfer list shortlist. Looking today, according to Belgian outlet DH, a move for Christian Benteke has been mooted, which is one of those that would definitely suit him, would probably suit Palace. and would suit Villa if he managed to get back to those levels, but that's a big if. But again, I mean, he was great there before. Probably the last time he was actually a good footballer. So maybe like it would be a good move for him. Yeah, exactly. And again, I mean, yeah, he's a non-scoring striker at the moment, but he does have similar attributes to Wesley in that he is a strong focal point, plays well with his back to goal and can link play and basically lay the ball off to Grealish, which is what Villa want.
And they have El Ghazi and Trezeguet trying to become those goal scoring wingers to an extent as well. So you need someone that can link up. And remember, Benteke, that one goal where he sat down Courtois against Chelsea, he has got that sort of technique.
He has got ability, but his confidence
is rock bottom.
But maybe a return back to Villa Park would be good. But and then other strikers linked, Islam Slimani. is another one who has the same...
He's such a player.
Yeah, he's got the same physical attributes again, but he's been great at Monaco, so that looks very, very unlikely. Eddie Nketiah at Arsenal was another one linked, but he's not going to be leaving Arsenal now. Mm. Christophe Piatek, who's been linked with about half of the clubs in the Premier League, who is basically just a poacher. He's a finisher. Mm. He doesn't really operate much.
That's not what Villa need, is it?
Yeah, so he doesn't really operate much outside
last season, Piontek was finished top scorer. So 2018-19, finished top scorer for Genoa, top scorer for Milan and Poland.
Yeah.
Again, Lewandowski had that weird period where he didn't score for Poland and then European qualifying obviously was banging them in. But 2018-19, Piontek was top scorer and not a single assist was provided in that time as well. Yeah. So if they're looking for a link man, then you'd probably say, be careful, don't get swayed by the goals, because he got an assist, Piontek, in the Coppa Italia this week. And one of the replies was AC Milan, and I mentioned that it was his first assist, and an AC Milan fan had said, if only the AC Milan scouts were aware of this stat before, because we needed a link man. And obviously they've got Ibrahimovic now, who's the ultimate sort of like target man slash associative number 10, hold it up, with the flair as well. So maybe Piontek isn't the answer, especially, as you said, 30 million has been the price tag for that. Maybe
a loan they can scrape
imagine spending 55 million on two strikers and still going down in the championship.
I think Benteke is the obvious one, right? Because you could probably get him on loan. I just think there's so much talent there waiting to be unlocked or brought back to the surface. And he knows Villa. He played well at Villa before. That's got to count for something. Dean Smith's a very good manager, I think, at motivating those players, getting him out of it. To me, that makes the most sense.
And he actually played with Grealish as well when Grealish was first coming through in the Tim Sherwood days. Yeah, in the Tim Sherwood days. But there's that sort of existing relationship, I guess.
To me, that makes the most sense by far, I think. And that, I think he'd actually do quite well there, because it's, again, Benteke's problem is not talent.
Yeah.
It's just staying confident.
I think he's too far gone for saving for me.
Oh, maybe.
Sorry.
A couple of other names as well. Dwight Gayle and Michy Batshuayi, who will probably stay at Chelsea,
but Giroud looks like as well.
Yeah, Giroud looks like he's going. But those two as well, like Piontek, both finishers really, rather than players that get involved in build-ups. So.
Batshuayi scored more goals on loan from Chelsea in the Premier League than he has for Chelsea. So maybe that's one to tread. Or will they? Can't get him on loan.
Yeah, he'd be a good one. I think out of those, he'd probably be, in terms of the sort of non-target man types, he'd probably be the best one.
Yeah, Batshuayi scores goals wherever he has played. So if that's what they're looking for, maybe Batshuayi. But tough for Aston Villa. And combined with injuries and sort of loan deal addiction has been the problem. And it might not be enough to keep them up. But we'll leave it there for now. After the break, we'll be talking about some deals that haven't gone through as well, but the key ones you should be looking out for in January and beyond. Now we discuss the most wanted man, maybe, in Europe for the past year. Bruno Fernandes, according to The Telegraph, has agreed personal terms to join Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side at Old Trafford. And his final game for Sporting Club de Portugal will be the Lisbon Derby against Benfica, which takes place Friday evening. So that one, transfer stories to keep an eye on. He's 1-6 to join before the end of January window. So it looks like this one's going to happen. Not much value in doing that. So we're going to talk about what he may bring to Old Trafford, and whether they can expect a midfielder that has scored tons of goals in the Primera Liga. Recently, as part of the William Hill partnership, we did a comparison with Pogba's stats to see whether he'd be a replacement, an alternative, or the ideal teammate for him. Sam, we're coming to you for this one. Is he the answer to all of those problems?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great shout from him to stick around for the derby and potentially cement his legacy with some sort of goal to sign up, cap his career for Sporting. So for me, the price sounds a bit big, but then if you look, so he's 25 years old, 19 caps for his country, contract set to expire in 2023, and by a lot of reports, the club's top earner. And given that it's a January deal, it's a perfect time for Sporting to be selling.
So again, in that recent report, sorry, just because we haven't mentioned the price, was they were initially apparently holding out for 68 million. And then 50 million is the closer value that was written in that latest report, with George Mendes obviously being involved and being at the game against Wolves in the FA Cup.
That was George Mendes' Kaluza, wasn't it? That
yeah.
So yeah, the main thing I wanted to bring up is that usually when players come from Sporting, Benfica, Porto, Portugal's main clubs, to the Premier League, it tends to be their first move into a major league. But obviously, Fernandes has had a fair amount of experience already. Three consecutive seasons of 30-plus appearances in Serie A with Udinese and Sampdoria. Albeit when he was a bit younger and clearly still developing, he scored 4, 3, and 5 goals in Italy during those seasons where he was playing regularly, before he went back to Sporting, which is where his goal output shot back up. So he scored 16 goals in 27-18. Then there was a big jump again to a total of 33 last season, 10 of which were in domestic cups, which is obviously huge, huge numbers. And last season as well, he finished second in the Golden Boot race behind Seferovic. This season he's been flying again with 15 goals so far. 5 of those have come in the Europa League. So the biggest question mark for me really is whether he can hit those numbers in the Premier League. I've seen quite a lot of stuff on social media that Solskjaer is going to be getting a certain goal scorer, and that's one of the key things that he's going to be bringing. But I think it's going to be a real struggle for him to hit those numbers straight away. Although he is 25 and seems to be primed for this big move, when you look at some of the other top scoring midfielders in the Prem this season, De Bruyne on 7, Ali and Madison on 6, they're the only ones in towards the top of the goal scoring charts that aren't out and out strikers really.
I think there's that cluster on 6 as well, like Grealish, Cantwell, and all of those players are on 6.
So I think people expecting him to come in and immediately just be this amazing goal scorer, that's not what he's going to be. It's going to be more about what else he can bring. Obviously we know he loves to shoot from long distance. He's really creative, very good at pressing as well.
Yeah.
So he's going to add that creativity that have been lacking.
That's what's been lacking, isn't it? And that's been the main issue for that side, is we need a number 10 has been the main call. And Fernandes, you mentioned there, loves a shot from range. 9 goals from outside the box since 2017-18, which if you put that into top 5 leagues, there's only 5-6 players ahead of him. Messi has 25 in that time. In the league, which just shows how bonkers he really is. But Fernandes has been involved in a shot every 14 minutes in the Primera Liga since 2017. And that is either shooting or a chance creation, which is a pass that directly leads to a teammate having a shot. So in terms of creativity, he matches it up. It's about 250 chances created and 250 shots. It's pretty equal split, despite him earning that reputation as being a shooter from range. Almost.
I mean, if you watch the Europa League final, UEFA Nations League final, that's where it came from. I mean, how many shots did he have in the first half hour of that match?
He's very similar to Hakim Ziyech in the sense that their shot maps can be quite a fun thing to look at.
Yeah.
Let's just say that if you are in that way inclined. I know many people might not even find shot maps fun, but I do, and they are fun to look at. And his one is interesting. A lot of them outside the box, as I said, converts frequently enough for it to be okay. We will allow you to have some shots. And Man United don't have anyone.
If you looked at the Man United versus Wolves in the FA Cup replay, the amount of times United would get into some sort of space, think, okay, shoot, take a touch, shoot, no, take another touch, and then the chance is gone. The Wolves are back in your way, and it's like, so frustrating. United needs someone. It's always, United needs someone that's just trigger happy. Like, one of the things Paul Pogba brought to United, even though his shots from range are pretty terrible for the most part, he spent like 4 years trying to score a 30-yard banger. I don't think he's done it. Yeah, maybe he's done it once.
He scored two. So when the stats are compared, he's got two goals outside the box in the league in that time.
And so, you know, but United, what that does is it keeps the goalkeeper honest, keeps the defence honest. It's like, oh, this guy might actually shoot. Let's step up and push him a little bit. And then that opens up. It's like the pick and roll in basketball. It opens up the pass in behind. If defenders just stand off you every time you have the ball, like, no one's closing Andres Pereira down. He's like, yeah, go on, have a shot then. What are you going to do? Mm. And then they don't have to close Juan Mata down because they know Juan Mata would rather pass the ball than shoot.
And he's so slow.
Well, he raced away to send them through to the fourth round.
If Connor Cody hadn't overcommitted like a maniac, I think that wouldn't have got him. But he did. Anyway, that's the only mistake he made all night, by the way, Connor Cody. He's really, really quite something. The Red Devils need a player like that. They need someone who can just apply pressure through shots because they don't shoot enough. Yeah. Really don't. It's absurd to say because...
Rashford enjoys shooting.
Yes, Rashford does, but I mean he's got a bad back, so I mean God knows what's going to happen to him after they force him to play against Liverpool. But yeah, you know, and you can see how he fits in with the other players there, right? So like he can create chances in the final third, not necessarily like a sort of game dominating creative player, but he'll show up in the final third, give me the ball behind the lines, and boom, I'll create a chance. Yeah, thread the balls through.
I'd contest that maybe a bit. I think in a dream scenario, they'll probably play a 4-2-3-1 to an extent. But if you can find someone to play behind Fernandes and Pogba, I think that would be a dream scenario.
That's just it.
Yeah, exactly. So and then it's more that Fernandes...
He becomes that sort of Kevin... Ideally, they want Bruno Fernandes to be their Kevin De Bruyne to an extent. A midfielder that is insanely creative. Kevin De Bruyne loves a goal from outside the box. I think he leads it since he returned.
Loves to peel out onto the right as well.
Is up there with Christian Eriksen. So that's maybe a lazy comparison and quite an easy one to make because obviously Manchester rivals, etc. But Manchester United have been looking for that sort of player for a while, someone that is a dynamic midfielder. Bruno Fernandes, as much as we talk about his shots and his chance creation and his set pieces, his output in other areas on the pitch is also massive. Yeah. He makes a huge amount of tackles. At Sporting, he transformed into a more complete midfielder, if that phrase actually makes sense.
Yeah. That's the
showed glimpses at Sampdoria, and then at Sporting is... He was directly involved in the most goals in the Premier League last season. 20 goals and 12 assists. Absurd. Maybe he won't get that.
Pressing is huge. That's the other thing as well, because United need to be able to press from the front. And, you know, again, that's one thing Juan Mata can't do because he's so much older now. But, you know, so if he can press, he seems to be the ideal fit. Like you say, you could even play a 4-3-3, but you need a number six. And the number six options at Old Trafford right now are... I mean, they don't have any. They could play Fred there. He's not really a six. Matic's not really a six. They'll do a job. But, like, Fred, I think, needs to play in a double pivot at the back. You know, Matic, same sort of thing. So
McTominay is
And McTominay's an eight as well. If you look at him, you want him bombing forward and back and making tackles and everything. Really, they've been linked with, Sean Longstaff was the big one. They were linked with him and it was like 50 million. They didn't want to pay it. They should have paid it. Whether or not he's worth 50 million, I think the skill set he has, there's no other player at that club that has that skill set, even close to it. Dylan Levitt maybe is one and he's 18 years old and very skinny. So it's...
Bruno Fernandes is very skinny, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, but he's...
That's one thing that genuinely to look out for is... Again, to make the Kevin De Bruyne comparison, which is, again, I'm using that as the pinnacle of what they would want him to become. Kevin De Bruyne is underrated for how athletic he is.
He's
extremely strong. He's quick when he gets going. Yeah, that's it. Extremely strong runner with the ball. Fernandes obviously has the guile, the technique, but he is very slight for someone that's quite tall. And maybe he'll pack that sort of wiry strength that's underrated and maybe it hasn't been tested as much and there'll be no need for it. But that's one, again, another thing to look out for is if he plays right next to the opposition defence in that number 10 role, if someone starts closing him down and getting close to him, that it's almost the cliched of the Premier League's more physical, but someone of his body size, from watching him, it's one thing that you have to take into account is whether he'll be able to operate to the same creative level if he were under more pressure and pressing more himself.
He's good at finding space, though. You have to say that, and he's good in transition. He's good with the ball when facing a defence. There's a lot to like about this deal. The only negative, and it's not really negative on the deal, is that United still need a defensive midfielder more than anything else. Is they're crying.
But they
out
needed
for
this player. Yeah. It's not like they've got. Yeah. It's not
they
like they've
pieced together that squad slowly but surely. I mean, yeah. Getting a January deal done of this magnitude will be a big deal for them if they get it.
You look at it, and it's one down. It means one less thing for the summer because they still need a right winger. If you're being honest, Dan James is not quite probably starter level yet. Maybe he will be in 2 years or not. And then defensive midfielder, and you could argue maybe they don't need a left back. I don't know. It depends how much you rate Brandon Williams. I think he's quite good, but going forward, maybe isn't as productive as you'd want him to be. Mm. So there's pieces they still need. I would argue that. Adding Bruno Fernandes to Old Trafford, I think, gives them a huge chance to make top four. Really does. But I still think number six is, if they really want to make it, I still think they need to get a number six.
So that was the thing I was going to end this section on, is say Bruno Fernandes is the only deal that comes through. It looks like that's the case. It looks like it is coming through, again, based on that report, personal terms agreed, one more game, etc. If this is the only signing, add that creativity. Paul Pogba perhaps returning to fitness in this time, playing again instead in the double pivot, and you have Fred Matic, Bruno Fernandes perhaps, and Pogba coming in instead. Is that enough to propel Man United into the top four? Because the odds at the moment, Leicester are clear favourites. I think we've said they're pretty much secured the points they've got. Chelsea in prime position to secure the final spot, 2-5. Man United, 11-4. Arsenal are 12-1. Wolves, 20-1. And Sheffield United, if you're feeling really brave.
I mean,
50-1 in there. So Man United, second favourites behind Chelsea to get the final spot if we're considering Leicester there. Is this enough? Is this goal-scoring, chance-creation machine?
Definitely gives them a massive boost, doesn't it? Because they have lacked that sort of drive and energy and chance creation from midfield all season. I mean, using that De Bruyne comparison that we've been talking about before, he's created 76 chances in the Premier League this season, which is the most of anyone in the division. United's top creator is Andreas Pereira on 28. So, I mean, nearly three times less. Yeah. So, just Fernandes is a bit of a pot shot merchant. He's more of a shooter than a creator, but he can weigh in with assists, as we've seen. And just sprinkling a little bit of creativity on that midfield should make a huge difference for them.
Someone that's been directly involved in the most goals during their time in the Primera Liga from midfield, and as much as we're saying number 10, it is still from midfield, to be involved in 67 goals in that time is... Sam, I know you mentioned that maybe that they need to be reined back. Mm. When we did the comparison, we actually did a version or looked at the stats again with a 0.75 multiplier timed onto it, just to give people, to appease the critics of Farmers League, etc. And that. But even if you peel that back, you're still hoping for 10 assists and 5 goals in this January period, which is more than anyone beyond.
That takes a significant weight off Martial and Rashford's figures. Definitely. I mean, it's amazing that really Rashford's got 14 league goals and Martial's got 8, having missed maybe half of the season so far. Considering Pereira's their top chance creator with 28, they're sort of feeding off scraps really and relying on each other to fashion chances with their movement. So adding another player into that will relieve the burden on them a little bit too.
I think it definitely could be enough. I think you basically need Fred to stay fit the whole season. If one injury for him and it's all going to fall apart behind Fernandes, basically. I think if I'd say, you know, I'll say yes. Let's be brave. I'll say yes, it is enough, but only just maybe like on goal difference or something.
Goal difference to the side. Sam, do you have any final thoughts? Chelsea too far ahead or already got enough?
Yeah, I'd fancy Chelsea to get over the line. Yeah.
And the next major transfer story that you should be keeping at least one eye out for is whether Barcelona, under new manager, Mo cheers in the background, Quique Setién, will actually push for Barcelona to sign a replacement for Luis Suarez, who has been ruled out for 4 months, I believe.
Yeah, after knee surgery. What's funny is, honestly, he was playing as good as he's played in 2 years when it happened. Like, his last three games were just really good. He was sensational against Espanyol in the derby. His assist for Vidal was just out of this world, if you've seen it. This is the thing. It almost ties in, weirdly enough, with Valverde leaving. And, you know, shout out to Valverde, because obviously he did win the first league. It's almost unbeaten, only throw it away because they made him rest Messi for a friendly in South Africa.
And Kiki Setien beat him.
Yeah. Well, that was the second season. Kiki Setien beat him. The first season, he almost won the league unbeaten, but lost one game because they had to rest Messi for a friendly, which is absurd. And he stabilised the Barcelona, but he didn't advance Barcelona enough. And that was very obvious in the second season. And one of the big things he didn't do was he didn't rest Luis Suarez. Now, Luis Suarez hasn't become a bad player. Luis Suarez is just old. And
he is a bad player, according to you, many times.
No. I said he played poorly. And, okay. And more to the point, the only reason he played poorly is because he played every single week. Because Luis Suarez is not someone like Cristiano Ronaldo who can sort of modulate his physical output in games and just slow down and take it easy and then come to life at the right moments. He just has to play 100 miles an hour all the time. And so you have to save people like that from themselves. Like, so he had to be rested from games to be like, look, I need you for this game. Calm down. Have a week off. Just chill. But Valverde never did that. He played him, played him, played him, played him, played him. And eventually he's broken because he's 33 now. He'll be 34 in April, I think. So you can't keep pushing the human body that far.
He struck me as a player that would also say, I'm not a bit rested.
Yes, also, rested. Yeah. But that's where you're the manager to be like, look, I know you want to play, you crazy person. Just calm down. Just relax. Just like, chill, Luis.
Like Rashford.
Well, yes, exactly. You have to stop. Sometimes you have to save players from themselves because players are always going to say, I'm healthy, coach. I can make it, you know.
So, based on what you've said there, it sounds like that even without Suarez being there, Griezmann was signed and played alongside Suarez and Messi. It sounds like it would be a good idea anyway for Barcelona to sign another striker.
Yeah, this is the thing. Griezmann, you know, you spent 120 million on Griezmann, but is he a nine? Not really. He'll probably end up playing there under Quique Setién because they don't have anyone else right now anyway. Whether they play 3-5-2 and play him up front with Messi as a two, or they actually just play him as a nine and sign a winger or something, I don't know. But you need to replace Suarez. You need a number nine, right? You can't play Griezmann there permanently. And the obvious choice, the standout choice, the one they've been linked with all season is Lautaro Martinez, Inter. And again, if you watch Lautaro Martinez, you know why they're linked with him. Not only is he really good anyway, he reminds you of Luis Suarez the way he plays. A younger Luis Suarez, particularly the way he presses. His defensive numbers are ridiculous. The way he leads the press, harasses defenders, constantly nicks the ball back from them. He's like 5'8", 5'9", or something. And if you watch Barca versus Inter, Inter's goal comes because he's backing into Tadebo. Tadebo's 6'3" and just massive. And he's just backing into him, out-muscling him. He's a phenomenal competitor, phenomenal fighter.
El Toro.
I mean, that
nickname
sums it up.
For a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And he scores unorthodox goals, either foot. You know, he can score headers as well. Although, I mean, Barca never crossed the ball, so whatever. But he's everything Barca could want in a striker. And he's Argentine, so he's going to worship Messi.
So he's not going to play very well with Messi.
Hey, I see what you did there. No, he's not Gonzalo Higuain, Jake. He's not going to. Although, actually, to be fair, Higuain always played well with Messi. It was just final. Anyway, look, getting off track.
That's because I know your little triggers.
Yes, I know you do. Speaking of South America, another good option they've been linked with is Gabigol. Gabriel Barbosa.
So in terms of odds for these, Gabriel Barbosa is actually perceived to be more likely. And that's perhaps because Flamengo's season has finished.
Yeah.
He's obviously at Inter Milan also, technically now. He's not going to be favoured by Conte.
Well, that's
been made clear because they've got Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku. They've formed a brilliant partnership, which shows that Lautaro can also play, should they want to, and synergise as well with other strikers, not just playing on his own.
Yeah.
So Gabigol, as he is named, equaled Neymar's calendar year record in Brazilian football for most goals, which I believe was 43.
Yeah,
and 59. That was a season before Neymar went to Barcelona.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see a lot of why they do it. To me, that's a mistake. And Lautaro is clearly the ideal one. If you sign Gabigol, Inter don't need to then sell you Lautaro. You should sign Lautaro and say, hey, Inter, you can have Gabigol. We'll have Lautaro. But if Gabigol is playing well, he played well for Flamengo. Obviously, won the Libertadores, got to the final World Cup. You know, and you can see why you'd sign him, right? He's robust physically, can compete. He's left-footed though, so I mean, you imagine having a front three of all left-footers. That'd be weird, wouldn't it? He's competitive. He scores big goals. He can score scrappy goals. Can score good goals. You can see he's kind of almost like a budget version of Lautaro, basically. Like, you know, you can sign Lautaro,
which is usually what you have to go for in a January window.
Yeah, I mean, so, and you can see why they would be linked tempted to do it. I personally think it wouldn't work. And also, if they still have designs on getting Neymar back, Neymar and Gabigol don't get on because Gabigol is dating Neymar's sister. So, never mind. There's a picture now. I put a snap up, and there's like a poster of the wall of them after they won the Olympics, and he's put a pin over Gabigol's face.
Really?
On the poster on the wall. It's quite funny. Other players have been linked with Rafael Leao, who's been awful at Milan, but like that's kind of like
Milan
his fault.
Are awful.
Yeah, exactly. So he's 20 years old. So he's a very promising young striker, quite tall, quite rangy.
Jose Font gave us a bit of knowledge on Rafael Leão before, saying that he was the best prospect at Lille, and that was when he was playing alongside Pepe and others. So.
Yeah, so, you know, and he would be an interesting one, because I think you wouldn't sign him to come in straight away. Like Lautaro and Gabigol, they come in, you're thinking, okay, you guys are going to score at least 15 goals before the season ends, right? With Leão, you're not sure. Like, you're almost signing him for next season, say, Kike Setien, can you work with this kid? Can you make him, build him up, get his confidence back? And maybe he'll score a few goals for us here and there, but primarily this is for the future, because he's 20 years old. Mm. So, you know,
I guess it depends if Barcelona are thinking that they are signing a long-term replacement for Suarez, or they just need the stopgap while he's out injured.
Well, I mean,
is he done, full stop?
Well, they've been looking for a replacement for him for a while now. That's the thing. Like, they know he's aging. I think even he knows he's aging. Like, if you read the comments he's had, it's like, it's natural Barcelona looking for a replacement for me, and then, you know, I want to play every single week. So they need to replace him. It's just a matter of, like, obviously, as Jake says, can you sign someone to replace your number nine, one of the best number nines in your history, in the middle of the season? I mean, Inter aren't going to sell Lautaro. I'd be amazed if they sell Lautaro before it would be very strange. I mean, I know
Conte would be fuming at that. He moans about his squad every week. Yeah. Imagine if they sold Lautaro.
I mean, I think they will in the summer. I think it's very likely they'll sell him in the summer, because that's just what Inter do. And I think, and plus the thing is, not only are they, I mean, yeah, you could say they're out of the Champions League, but they're in a title race. They could win Serie A. And I think they've got a good shout of it. But I do think in the summer, Barca will go back for Lautaro, and I think it will happen, just because Barca always seem to get their man when it comes to South Americans. But in January, I don't think so. There's Rafael Leão. And then the final one that I think actually is the one they should really go for. I don't know what the odds are on this one. I don't know if they've even been linked that seriously. But Chimi Avila, Argentine striker playing for Osasuna. He's got 9 goals in 18 games this season in La Liga. If you watch him, he's great fun. Like, he's 25, so he's just sort of emerged out, like, been a bit of a late bloomer. He scored loads of goals. I think he's fourth in La Liga's goal scoring charts behind Messi,
Suarez,
Benzema, and Suarez. So he scores unorthodox goals, left foot, right foot, lots of crazy goals. Doesn't seem to need to put on a plate for him, which is really important for Barca, because, I mean, sometimes it's not going to be on a plate for you, and you have to create your own shots. He's got 25 million release clause, so he wouldn't be expensive. And I think that's a perfect kind of stopgap, because he comes in, he'll do quite well for you this season, probably. And then next season, he's a decent backup to whoever you do sign. And then you can sell him, or you could loan him out next season. You could just sign him for 6 months. 25 million is not that much money. Barca recently top of the Deloitte Money League. They're raking in absurd amounts of cash.
But they also have made loads of bad signings.
Yes, like, yes.
They're top of that money league, but all of their signings recently have been a bit like short term.
They wouldn't be top of a profit league, put it that way. Their expenditure is obscene. But although you'd imagine they're soon to shift Rakitic, soon to shift Vidal, soon to shift Suarez, that's a huge chunk of wage or change off the wage bill.
They won't shift. Surely Luis Suarez will just stay.
No, his contract expires at the end of 2021. And I think he'll probably leave. I think he'll probably. This is
back to Ajax.
No, I think he'll go to the MLS. I think, because there was rumours Beckham's Orlando team wanted him.
Do you think moving on from Suarez's future itself? So. Yeah. Lautaro Martinez dream, but maybe for the summer, and then Avila is the sort of stopgap.
I think it makes sense.
Do you think Suarez's injury will stop them from winning La Liga? Especially under a new manager. Remember, Valverde kept winning La Liga.
He did, but if you watch the way he won La Liga, I mean, I've seen this on this hot take appear a lot on the top that won 2 leagues in a row. Well, he won, you could definitely 100% say, yeah, you won 17-18 La Liga. That was almost entirely your brilliance to lift that, because that Barcelona was shattered. If you watch them play in the Super Cup against Madrid at the start of that season, they got whomped, both legs in Pique. For the first time since I've been here, I feel inferior to Real Madrid. And they were rubbish. And he galvanised the team, carried them to the title. 18-19 was completely different. From the very first game of the season, Barca did not really play good football. They've been rescued by miracle goals from Dembele, from Suarez, from Messi. Pointing out, though, Sestegen had a monster season, which, I mean, you know, and he's having a great season this year, but it's not a monster season, and so you can see the difference. Barca, and all the mojo that they had last season to win those games out of nowhere is gone, and you can see the season, they're just awful away from home. They just lose games, they can't seem to keep a clean sheet to save their lives. They weren't going to win La Liga. The fact that they were joint top is only because Real Madrid aren't actually that good either, or only recently found their form to become good, put it that way. This change, I think, even without Suarez, with Suarez, it doesn't make a difference. I think Kike Setien getting him in, that's going to be the change. I think they will win La Liga, because I think they're now going to start playing positive football, proactive football. That's going to be to the advantage of their better players that they've signed. They signed Antoine Griezmann and then play him as a left wing back. They're signing Frankie de Jong. I was like, yeah, just stay there, fill a hole. Now they've got a coach who's going to get these guys to express their boy. They've got Ricky Pooch coming through. Remember, Quique Setién is the guy who made Fabian Ruiz and Dani Ceballos like phenomenal talents. And now he's got Frankie de Jong and Ricky Pooch at his disposal. And Busquets, who's been a big fanboy of his ever since Barca got whomped at the Camp Nou. Remember also, Quique Setién, it's not just Betis. He was manager of Las Palmas when they were great. Remember Roque Mesa? Came to Premier League. That was him. Yeah, Jonathan Vieira.
He was good in the Premier League. Roque Mesa.
He's not a standout candidate though, was he? In terms
who?
Of
who? Quique Setién. Yeah. No, he wasn't. I mean, there are rumours that he was Bartomeu's first choice, but I don't think that's true. But they wanted a lot
of reports that they've put in a break clause at the end of the season, which suggests that really, I mean, both parties know that he's going to leave at the end of the season.
If I had to guess, I think he's probably going to be there till the end of next season, unless he's obviously a disaster. But I think end of next season, there's elections. And I said they can't guarantee him beyond that because Bartomeu's group might not win it. Yeah, I mean, it can't be Bartomeu. I think he's had two terms, but his successor may not.
So surely as well, then with Setién, we're more likely to see again that stopgap centre forward if he needs one.
Yeah.
If this is just going to be 6 months of a trial, and hopefully it's going to be beautiful, lovely football with a new striker up front and loads of goals.
I don't even think they need a new striker necessarily, because I think if you look at Betis, they've had a lot of 3-5-2. And I think in a weird way with Barca, because Ousmane Dembele is currently injured till February and God knows what state he'll come back in. And they don't really have another winger except for Ansu. Ansu is 17 years old. I don't know if you want to put that burden on a 17-year-old, although he looks very good, but he's 17. You've got to bring him in gently. So you can play 3-5-2, play Messi and Griezmann up front. I don't think you need another striker there. I think you play those two up front in a free world, they can figure it out. They're two of the best strikers in the world. Messi is the best one in the world, but Griezmann's phenomenal as well. Yeah, midfield three, wing backs, I think it works. So I think they'll play well.
So maybe look out for a striker in the summer when all things will be confirmed. Yeah. But Barcelona themselves, new manager, La Liga, still in the Champions League. Valverde famously, maybe his legacy is tainted more so because of the Champions League results.
But
we'll see what happens with those. And for the final part of the Squawker Talker transfer special with William Hill, we're going to be doing a Squawker 6 of signings that are really, really, really interesting. And so we finish the Squawker Talker transfer special with William Hill by picking 6 done deals you might have missed. And even if you haven't missed them, they're so interesting that you're going to want to hear about them again. For those of you uninitiated in the Squawker 6 format, we have goalkeeper, fullback, centre-back, centre-midfielder, winger and striker that we usually make a six-a-side team of the theme. And this theme is done deals from the January transfer window that you may have missed. Fairly simple. We've got 2 each. Well, the guests have 2 each. I'm not involved. I'll be giving my opinion on each pick, so make sure they're good. And we'll start, of course, with the goalkeeper, which was bestowed upon you, Oliver Young-Miles.
So I've gone for Asmir Begovic. So we were talking about Pepe Reina earlier, the fact that he's gone to Aston Villa. That obviously created a huge void in Milan's squad for their second choice keeper.
Of getting sent off on the substitutes bench.
Yep, an angry sub goalie. So they've gone for, naturally, Asmir Begovic, whose loan with Karabag in Azerbaijan ended, and he's gone back out on loan from Bournemouth to Milan, which I would suggest is the weirdest season in any professional footballer, footballer's career ever. Bournemouth to Karabag to Milan
He's had quite a career himself anyway, because someone that's played again for Yeovil Town on loan as well and now finds himself at AC Milan. And also, and this is going to ruin the facade that I didn't know who you were going to pick, but I couldn't resist having a little further look at Asmir Begovic when you proposed him. 2007 Canadian Under-20 Player of the Year. 5 years later, 2012 Bosnia Footballer of the Year, when Edin Dzeko was at Man City.
Ooh. And so scored the equaliser in the title winning game.
He was really good.
No, I'm not saying he wasn't good. Yeah. I'm saying that to add to your, this season's been one of the most bizarre of a footballer's career, his football career in general is full of interest. And as you said, also has scored a Premier League goal, which not every goalkeeper can say.
But he didn't celebrate. Very much a member of the Goalkeepers Union,
which is why he is a prime choice for the done deal you may have missed. Asmir Begovic to AC Milan on loan. So he's on loan from Bournemouth.
Yeah, still, until the end of the season.
Until the end of the season. Well, we have our goalkeeper. And this is where we would usually have a fullback. But, Sam Long, you decided not to do this because you were so unhappy with the fullbacks that have been signed in the January window.
I searched and searched, but I couldn't find anyone applicable.
He searched and searched for a fullback, and we could not find one. So, a done deal you may have missed of just a defender has now gone to Mohamed Butt. Who have you got?
I've got two defenders. The first one, Jack Rodwell. Guys, remember Jack Rodwell? Remember when he was a thing?
So yeah, I think
Sunderland till I die fame.
I mean,
I think a lot of people will have seen that deal. So why is he worthy of a Squawker 6 defender?
For finally, after I don't know how many years it's been now, Jack Rodwell is going to play in central defence. But it's not just, it's a central defensive role that actually perfectly suits his skill set. Because it was always, oh, he's going to play a centre half one day because he was big. That was the argument. He was a big defensive midfielder, played centre half one day, and he was not. He's not centre half. But Sheffield United, who he's gone to on a free transfer, play, as we all know, overlapping centre halves who have a sort of dual role. They're centre halves. They're also wide, play wide, push forward into midfield, advance to play, and that perfectly suits Jack Rodwell. That's ideal for Jack Rodwell. That way he can use the best of, you know, to use FM's parlance, he's a DM/CB, you know, it's the perfect position for him, right? And I think he's you know, he played against Will Hall's FC Fylde in the FA Cup, and
I thought you were gonna say Atlanta then.
Well, Will Hall's a man of many teams. He's a man of many teams, and you know, he played okay. He did lose Alex Whitmore on a free kick who hit the post. And it was 1-0, so that wasn't so good. But he generally played okay. He looked comfortable enough in the system-ish. And Fylde, who did score, that guy came after he went off. It was in his channel where he would have been, but he would have been subbed off. So, you know, he's...
So he's interesting because he's going to play the role. And I think we even did a piece when he signed that he said, I think it was in 2016 when he was asked about playing centre-back. He said 2014. 2014?
After the World
was
Cup.
Was it you that wrote it?
It was.
Well, yeah, there you go. You should
he
be
was eyeing
that.
Up Frank Lampard's central, or Stephen Gerrard, one of them, central midfield place for England at the time.
And didn't want to play centre-back because it was boring. Yeah. But he's gone to the least boring centre-back role
in the world. This is a dream situation.
There we go. And then, because Sam lumped you with that and we didn't have a fullback, you then had to pick another defender. So what's another done deal people may have missed?
Jean-Claire Tadebo has gone on loan to Schalke, FC Schalke 04 from Barcelona, who's a 1.5 million loan fee with a 25 million plus 5 million release clause, purchase clause, basically. And Barcelona have retained, this is such a weird deal, they've retained a 50 million plus 10 million buyback clause.
If they
want to
activate
buy back.
The 25 million.
But that's like, you'd think, what? Aren't buyback clauses usually smaller than that? It's very strange. But this is weird because if you watch Tadebo play at all last season, particularly this season, you'd think, okay, what the hell are Barcelona doing? Their right side centre back is 32 years old, Gerard Piqué. He's going to be 33 in a month. He likes tennis a lot and doesn't always seem to, you know, takes a long time to get started in the season. Doesn't always look like he's necessarily 100% focused. He's focused now. He's running time. But why would you let this? I mean, you know, when they signed Tadebo, it was like there was no one sort of paid attention to it because they were chasing De Ligt at the time, and it was like De Ligt was the big hype. They got Tadebo, I think, for like free or very little compensation for Toulouse, and Toulouse got very angry with him. Whatever. He's really good. He's got everything you want in a defender. He's tall. He's fast. He's strong. He's very, very technical on the ball, very confident dribbling out of defensive. Again, if you watch Barcelona play Inter at the San Siro, his duel with Lautaro Martinez was fantastic. They were both giving it as good as they got. Tadebo was important to everything. I think he played a huge part in the goal they scored, dribbled the ball out of defense. He looks every inch of Barcelona centre-back, like a young Varane, which is what he's been touted as. You can see the Varane comparisons all over. And they've just sold him. Like they've
loaned him.
Well, they've loaned him, but
there's
an option
to buy. Yeah, but the option if they regret it, they can buy him back.
For 50 million, it's such a strange deal because genuinely, he should be playing for Barca's first team now. They should be rotating, resting Gerard Piqué because he's old. You want to rest him for the bigger games. They should be playing him now. And more, you know,
32. I'll contest 32 is old for a centre back.
Well, not a centre back who's obsessed with tennis, though. and spends all his time trying to set up tennis tournaments that no one really wants, by the way. Gerard, calm down.
So Jean-Claire Todibo, yeah.
No, they don't. That's the thing. Tennis fans hate him. They can't stand it. Like, stay out of our tournaments.
Picked because of the intricacies and of the deal, which, to be fair, a lot of loan deals might have, but Barcelona are brilliant because they have to publish it all.
Yeah, they just tell you.
So we got to see all of it, and we got to see how ridiculous it was. So we have Asmir Begovic. We have Jack Rodwell and Jean-Claire Todibo in this six-a-side team.
Very random team.
Yes. Well, that's exactly what we wanted. And now we go to central midfield.
Yeah. So I've gone for Stanislav Lobotka, who's gone to Napoli for €20 million. He's a bit of a stats wonder kid, really, that we've been looking at for the past couple of seasons. I have
now 25, so no longer the wonder kid.
Wonder Man.
Yeah, he's older than I thought. Yeah. But exactly. I've copied and pasted a Squawker tweet from yesterday or earlier in the week. just on his numbers, really. He's basically a take-on and passing machine. 111 take-ons attempted, 87 completed, 78% success rate, and then over 4,000 passes, over 3,800 completed, and 90% success rate with his passing. So,
and
very good progressive midfielder.
And that's since 2017-18 in La Liga for Celta Vigo, which is where he's been signed.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think that's a very smart purchase from Napoli, because I think they're going to lose Fabian Ruiz in the summer because he's too good to play for Napoli. Mm. With all due respect to Napoli, they'll need someone to replace him. They've already signed their replacement.
Wait, that's the way to do it.
This was the thing I was going to speak about, though, is because you've just said there, too good for Napoli, who were finishing second behind Juventus not too long ago. Now they're 11th, 11 points off Champions League. Fabian Ruiz, who you mentioned, has been mooted to join Real Madrid and Barcelona. Mm. Again, you can already get January transfer odds on that from William Hill, 5-2 to join Real Madrid before the window shuts. Dries Mertens, who is coming into his final year of his contract, has been linked to Arsenal, their favourites at 7-2, to sign for any Chinese Super League club, 8-1. But I remember his wife was very unhappy with a potential move to China.
And the Chinese Super League is the bubble's burst, apparently, isn't it?
They're capping the wages.
Salary cap. So,
and there's Koulibaly, apparently.
Well, this is the whole thing with Napoli, is that this window is basically the start of their regeneration of the Sarri team. Basically, the Sarri team is disintegrating now. They've also signed another centre mid, Diego Dem, from Leipzig.
He was Naby Keita's partner when the two of them were together. So yeah, I mean, you can see that Dem and Lobotka, that's a very good partner.
I mean, they're linked with players all over the place, which makes sense considering in November De Laurentiis, their crazy president, put the whole squad up for sale. This is basically what happened with why Ancelotti left, was because De Laurentiis put the whole squad in retiro, basically forced them to train and they didn't want to in a training camp. Yeah. And Ancelotti sided with the players initially and then sided with De Laurentiis and then lost everyone and was sacked. Basically, Sarri's brilliant Napoli team that everyone loved watching is slowly getting torn apart. Koulibaly, as we mentioned, is probably going to go. Alan or Zielinski or both, or Ruiz. Mm. Two or three of those will go, you'd think, now that they've signed two centre mids. Mertens and Callejon are pretty much nailed on to leave at the end of their contract. So.
And Insigne as well is someone that's always caught the eye. Again,
well, he's a local player who isn't really loved in Naples, which is quite a weird one. But
Napoli, interesting one, because Lobotka, as you said, marks the proper end, and also statistically a very nice little player that would have actually ironically played quite well in a Serie team, I would have thought. Retaining possession wise, the only player to have 75% and 90% success rate in the passing and dribbling.
That is the funny thing. Dem and Lobotka are Sarri signings. You could see them playing together. Sarri would play, Lobotka play at the base, and Dem would play shuttling wrong.
And then just get Marek Hamšík back.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hamšík, I was going to mention, his international colleague for Slovakia.
Yes.
And scored left last January, didn't he? And that was basically the start of this whole new project for Napoli.
New project, which isn't going very well.
No.
But the one achievement is that they've made it into the Squawker Six done deals you may have missed. Stanislav Lobotka goes into centre midfield. We have two more positions left. The first is a winger. Sam Long, you ditched fullback because you wanted to do the more exciting stuff.
I did.
Who have you gone for?
I've gone for Ryan Barbel, who is back to Ajax for his third spell at the club. He's 33 now and has agreed a six-month short-term deal with the Amsterdamers, which is, of course, where he started his career before he got his big move to Liverpool. He's probably not going to start with Neres and Promes available, but they were caught a little short towards the end of 2019. I think there was something like 6 points clear at the top of the table. Saw that cut back down. They're back up to three, a 3-point lead. So bringing someone like Barbo in could be the difference between them just edging the Eredivisie title race. And I imagine that part of his decision-making process has one eye on Euro 2020 being around the corner. So obviously he's a bit closer to Koeman's glare.
Base.
Playing with Primers as well, national team teammate.
And with Depay out, potentially. So chance to form a strong bond.
Exactly. And I've got visions of Barbo popping up in the Euro 2020 semi or final, scoring an Eder type
semi or final. They're already going that far. I'll tell you what he does really have his eye on, Sam, is that he could win an Eredivisie title in three different decades with Ajax.
Oof.
2004, when he first started, he did another little sabbatical there in the 2012-2013 season, one.
Yeah.
And then cheekily, because we'd just be going into 2020, so I think it still works. I know there's debate over century, decade, when do they actually start. It starts in 2020 for this stat, and he could win that. As you said, 3 points clear. And Ryan Babel, who, remember, was at loan at Fulham recently and was very good.
I mean, his career, so he looked like he was heading for retirement when he left them the second time. Went to Turkey, Deportivo La Coruña. I think he went to Abu Dhabi.
Such a weird career.
Yeah. He's been, and then Fulham, he popped up. Yeah,
popped up at Fulham, was quite impressive. It was like, oh, wow, Babel was way better than everyone else in this Fulham team, sort of thing, as they tried to drag them up the table.
But he's only 33. In my mind, he's like,
he's just been
knocking on 40.
He's been been around for ages. And when you play for that many clubs, you seem like you have to add a year for every club. But he's doing an Asmir Begovic and doing 3-1, three different countries.
I don't know
if
he can beat Karabag, though.
No, Ajax is quite a nice place to go. And he's, obviously he has the ties there. So, winger, done.
Yep.
The final spot, which again falls to you, Sam. A done deal you may have missed or is super, super interesting.
Yeah, I've gone for Ryan Brewster to Swansea on loan. So Swansea...
From Liverpool.
From Liverpool.
In case you haven't known. Yeah. These people might have missed these, Sam.
Yeah. If you missed that Ryan Brewster plays for Liverpool, then...
Yeah. But, well, you never know. So, to Swansea, unknown from Liverpool.
So, Swansea are the lowest scorers in the current top seven of the Championship and are outside of playoff places on goal difference alone. So, if Brewster scores the goals that many have expected him to, he's sort of built up quite a lot of hype without ever really playing for Liverpool.
Big old injury.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, it seems like he's been around for ages, but he's still a teenager.
Is he 40 years old as well? Him and Ryan Babel on the wings.
he's never made a Premier League appearance, but I mean, but everyone seems to sort of know who he is.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we touched on earlier about the importance of loan signings for teams in the Championship. And it's not actually just him that they've signed. They've also signed Gallagher from Chelsea and Mark
Gay, I think is how you pronounce it. It's G. This is always
G U E. Yeah, H I.
And I think that's how I've heard it pronounced. So apologies if that is wrong. But yeah, they're collecting essentially.
Yeah,
Steve Cooper's England under 17 World Cup winners.
Exactly, and I've also got Freddie Woodman as well, the goalkeeper from Newcastle. So there's a sort of young lions sort of
for the Welsh based team. Some irony there, but Steve Cooper obviously has a lot of sway with those players because that team was very good, obviously won the under 17 World Cup. Mark Gay scored in the final, was his captain at the Euros before that when they reached the final. Ryan Brewster scored 8 goals in that under 17 World Cup and became the first player to score back-to-back, or the second player to score back-to-back knockout hat-tricks at an under 17 World Cup after Marcel Witaszek in 1985. So, as you said, a lot is expected of Brewster because of stats like that. Mm. Had a prolific tournament there. Conor Gallagher as well, who you mentioned on loan from Chelsea, didn't play in the under-17 side, but is now an England under-21 international, if I remember rightly. 6 goals and 2 assists for a struggling Charlton side. And as you sort of mentioned off-air, Chelsea have said, right, you're clearly good. Charlton aren't very good.
Mm.
People are going to want to sign you. We'll put you in a better team.
It happens quite a lot. Like you tick your boxes in the first half of the season, and then you know they're not going to learn anything more about him by him playing another 20 games for Charlton now. So if he's got a chance to go and prove himself at a team going for promotion, then he could. Well, you look at the players like Mount, etc., in the Championship last season. Mm. If you're a Chelsea player and you perform in the Championship, you could have a crack at the first.
As long
team
as
next
they
season.
Get banned from making transfers again. Well, which is harsh because we don't know, because Frank Lampard obviously managed Mason Mount and Fico Tomori, so he was obviously a fan. So Rhian Brewster signing for England under-21s in the Championship is the striker. 40-year-old Ryan Babel, winger. The nomadic Azmir Begovic as goalkeeper. Two centre-backs, because there aren't any full-backs that have been signed that we may have not missed. Jean-Claire Todibo and Jack Rodwell, the rampaging overlapping centre-back. And in the middle of midfield, Stanislav Lobotka. The end of the Maurizio Sarri era and the end of the Squawker Talker William Hill transfer special. So thank you to everyone that has listened. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, if you're 18 plus and you are gambling responsibly, all the odds can be found on William Hill's website. Transfer specials, as well as specific teams like Liverpool Invincibles and the top four race, all of that will be in the link below. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to my guests for joining me. And we'll see you next time on the Squawker Talker.